Welcome to another episode of the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm your co-host in a different spot, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, coming to you today. That's why you might hear some odd sound quality. That's the AirPods and not my normal mic. And on the other side, we have Brawley in St. Louis after a 1-1 draw with Crystal Palace on Wednesday, December 16th. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing okay. Not bad. Considering we went 1-0 down, I guess 1-1 is not the worst result in the world, but like you said, we are recording straight after the Crystal Palace performance, and just ready to get into another episode.
Yep, and also I should mention, in our absence, we probably won't touch on some of the other results. However, still this week as well that we can talk about is a win against Leeds on Friday.
Yep, yeah, it's always, well, we haven't beaten Leeds at Elland Road for 20 years, I think since the year 2000. So all things considered, pretty good week to pick up 4 points.
Yeah, I'm pretty content. One of the things that strike me most about our current run is we find ways to get results, and I've said this on the last pod, and it's becoming a good and bad reoccurring theme, in my opinion, is we're getting results with poor performances. Like, I think that there's a lot of games in this stretch, you know, let's see, taking us back to the Fulham game where we won on this string of results. We beat Fulham 1-0, Sheffield 1-0, Villa 2-1, lost to United 3-1, beat Leeds 2-1, and drew Palace 1-1. And I would say of all those games, that first half against United I think was our best one.
Yeah,
we ended up losing that.
I would say our best game was the Man United, followed behind with Leeds. I thought Leeds, we were superb. But yeah, it just says how funky we can be as a team when our best performance resulted in our worst outcome during that stretch.
I mean, that first 65 minutes against that United game, you know, I thought we dominated them. Hard done by that VAR. But, you know, back to the net, we followed up with a massive win against Leeds. I thought we played extremely well in that result, too. You know, we took that momentum instead of crumbling in the after that ridiculous penalty VAR situation in the Leeds match, which we'll get into. You know, old West Ham teams would crumble.
Right.
We would say, oh, well, we're done. Away game, we're done. We're down 1-0, 5 minutes in. Felt hard done. Fabby saved the penalty. It's over. Fuck it. But, you know, here we are getting 4 points out of two games here.
Yeah, the penalty decision, I don't know. I guess we can just get into it now.
Yeah,
man.
Let's get into the Leeds game first.
So, I mean, you come out, and then within 4 minutes, Sebastian Allaire gives the ball away at midfield, and they just turn, and Fabs has to make a dive, and it's a penalty. It's definitely a penalty. It's the right decision, but that all comes down to Allaire. But then, you know, with VAR, like, this is not what it was brought in for to me.
Nope.
Like this is the worst, most nasty feeling.
It's
looking for something that isn't there. Fabianski has no advantage there. He's not gaining anything. Goalkeepers have to be allowed some form of buffer zone. I guess they're going to have to start standing behind the line on a penalty to try to get a run up. To gather the momentum to make a save that's going in the far corner, because otherwise it's impossible. You saw what he did on the retake when the player retook the penalty. He it looked like he barely dove, but that's him trying to stay on his line and dive, which is impossible to do as a goalkeeper. It's a position you played. It's a position I played. I know from
this is the big boy position.
Factually, that you can't gather enough momentum to save a penalty from staying on your line. So I just think VAR is looking for stuff that isn't there. And yes, by the letter of the law, he was off his line. Clearly, you could see literally a half an inch of green grass between his foot and the line. But it doesn't sit right with me, and I'm done with it. I'm tired of it. I'm ready for it to be gone. Something new has to happen because it's ruining the game. Luckily, it's not the only talking point because we ended up winning the game 2-1.
Yeah.
So I don't want to harp on it for too long, but I just don't feel good about that sort of. And that's what I think that happened at the Women's World Cup the last time that they played. I don't know when it was, but I believe that was a big talking point, and they said they were going to change it from that, and it seems to somehow crept back in where they're micromanaging the goalkeeper on his line. But anyway, that's my soapbox. I'm tired of VAR, especially in that situation. And then considering Bamford has a 7-yard sprint into the box, that encroaching, I know the law, I know the rule, I know it's he has to
impact the play
on the next phase of play, but still, I mean, why?
Well, arguably, how about this counterpoint? He distracts Fabianski for being in the box.
Yeah, that's
not really. I'm stretching.
Right.
But I'm trying to think of something. I guess my whole thing with the penalty situation is, you know, I've played goalkeeper, and I find penalties probably the most annoying thing ever, especially considering how difficult it is for the goalkeeper in the situation. I mean, if you just think about the crux of a penalty decision, right? You're talking about like a foul that you could be running away, right? And you're then awarded a one-on-one with the goalkeeper, no defenders, 12 yards out, right?
Yeah.
12 yards? Yeah, okay. Just double-checking. And then the goalkeeper, the run-up on the kicking, the penalty taker can do all kinds of run-ups, can do all kinds of this and that. The goalkeeper has to stay on his line. You know, there's so many disadvantages in things going against a goalkeeper in this scenario.
It only benefits the attacker.
That only benefits the attacker or the attacking team. So I would actually be interested in them introducing a secondary line that's maybe like 5-10 centimeters off of the original line. Because anyone who knows that when you play goalkeeper, you don't, like the way you dive, you need to generate momentum. And then also when you dive, you need to, I don't know how to describe it, you dive on an angle. You don't just dive straight flat.
Right.
And that's why they always jump forward and then have like a sprawling backwards like dive typically. So, you know, I just get really frustrated that half a centimeter, it's the law. I get it. It's just, I think it's ridiculous that we just spent 5-10 minutes talking about VAR instead of the wonderful result that we got.
Yeah, exactly. It's just frustrating to me. The fact that, and I get it, like the attacking team, like you want goals in the game, so the rules in a penalty situation maybe should benefit the attacker, but not to that extent. I mean, there still has to be a chance for a defending team to get out of that situation. And it seems like with the rules that they put in place, it really kicks it down to a minimum chance of the defending team getting out of that situation unscathed. And then the fact that if there's a rebound, the attacking team, the ball's still live, so the attacking team can just tap in a rebound.
There's so many things going against.
Yeah. I think the ball should just be dead. I think it just be there. No encroaching players. Yep. No anything. It's just the goalkeeper and the attacker and the penalty taker, and that's it. And then the play's dead. But
yeah, I agree with that.
Whatever. I mean, it is what it is. And so lead score, and then Tomáš Souček scores a goal from a set piece, classic West Ham goal. You could see from the get-go that Leeds really weren't up to defending set pieces the way we like to set up for set pieces. I mean, the height that we had a big height advantage.
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought we outclassed them 1,000,000%. And clearly, I mean, we scored 2 goals from set plays, and that was the difference in the game, and we won 2-1. So, but I thought Souček took it really well, and I was just pleased for Souček to get a goal.
Yeah, he did well to get over top of the defender without fouling him. I actually just rewatched it just to make sure it sounded like I know what I'm talking about. But when you rewatch that goal, especially with some of the things that we saw today, but we'll get into that in a minute. You know, a lot in the Premier League, they'll call fouls for the attacking players jumping over top of the defenders. So he did a really good job just going straight up, no foul. And the poor goalkeeper there, you know, he got a hand to it, but just crept across the line, and I'll take that goal for Souček. And, sure. You know, here we are all of a sudden a set-piece team. And then Ogbonna scored his from the free kick whipped in on the left side of the field as well. And same thing, unmarked in the back. And he did well not to foul the defender and got a header on it. You know, the one thing about this game as well against Leeds is it felt like there were so many opportunities. I mean, we created, I don't know how many opportunities to score. You know, Fornals missed. I didn't think it was really that bad. I think he misjudged the run, and then the ball got away from him, and that's why he slid and missed it. You know, Bowen missed a few. Allaire missed a few. So it wasn't just Fornals. I think Fornals is getting this weird Fornals hate, and I'm not loving that. I think it's really bizarre. You know, I just don't get it. You can like Benrahma and also Pablo Fornals. Like some people are just saying that he's terrible. Y'all are judging this 23-year-old player that I think that he's done well in the Premier League. I don't get the Fornals hate. You don't even have to like him, but I wouldn't. There's a lot of extra critique I think is unnecessary.
Yeah, I think he's getting this attention because he seems to be missing a lot of grade A opportunities, and I think he deserves credit for getting in
for
those
making the opportunities.
Situations at all. I mean, he's not creating all of them. I mean, he has had quite a few put on a golden platter. But he's finished a lot of them also. I mean, it's not like he's not had any goals. I mean, he's got, what, three or four? I don't have the stats in front of me, but he's got three or four goals this year. He's got at least three or four assists as well. I mean, I would say overall he's been one of our better players in the Premier League. I don't understand the hate, as you said. Now, especially now that Benrahma's in the team and he's not holding him out of the team. So I think I agree with you. I think the Fornals hate is – I think we have a question about that later at the end of the show. But I agree with you. I think the Fornals criticism is not fully warranted. I think he deserves a little – a Premier League player should be finishing some more of the chances that he is. But I think it'll come, especially like you said, he's 22 years old. I mean, he's a kid. So let's cut the kid a little bit of slack.
Yeah, I'm just double-checking his age here. He is 24. He'll be 25 in February. Okay. So, I mean, he's still young. It's not like he's some 27, 28 in his prime. So I'd cut him some slack in that realm. So we got a 2-1 win against Leeds. That was a nail-biter. I was stressed. I was sitting here in Florida sweating because of this nice warm heat. My hometown in Harrisburg's got 2 feet of snow today, so I dodged the bullet there. Let's move into today's game, though. I thought today we played poorly. I was not thrilled with what I saw, but we had one stroke of brilliance from Sebastian Allaire, and that got us the 1-1 result. And I don't even think we were that bad. We were just passengers. I thought we were non-existent, which leads to being poor.
Yeah, poor is probably you might be using the right word there. I think we were. Oh, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. I don't think we were clinical enough, and I think we have to start scoring more goals if we want to start consistently winning games. For example, Man United, we should have scored 3 or 4 or 5 in the first half. Yep. Leeds, we should have beaten them by 2 or 3 also. The Crystal Palace game, we were probably created our least amount of chances. We still had 9 shots, only 2 of them on goal. But if we want to start winning games, we got to start taking our chances. And we got to quit being this team that has all these chances and doesn't consistently put them away. It's we got to start. Basically, the end of the story is we got to start scoring more if we do want to be this European contender. Again, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but we're almost at Christmas and we're challenging. We're only 3 points outside the top 4, I believe. Again, not looking at the table, I can pull it up and fact check that pretty quickly. But we are, believe it or not, we are in a European battle right now. I mean,
yeah,
it's. Again, and I always say I don't like to look at the table until Christmas, but we're there. We're almost there. Our next game is our last game before Christmas, and we're challenging for a top 6 place. So I don't think I'm getting too carried away by saying that. Now, will I be relieved when we get to 40 points and we're safe and we don't have to worry about that at all? But I as it sits right now, I'm not worried whatsoever about the prospect of relegation. I think we're going to be totally fine. So now I can start looking up instead of down. And if we want to be contenders and not pretenders, we got to start finishing our chances. And so maybe that goes into the Pablo Fornals saying, hey, let's start finishing these chances. Allaire, was non-existent today, apart from the goal he scored. And by all means, full credit to him. That seems like that's one of the few goals that he can score on a regular basis. I mean, he tries
it once a game.
Yeah, at least once a game. And he could have scored against, was it Sheffield United with the overhead, or was it Leeds? I don't remember.
Leeds.
Or maybe both.
He almost did it last week, too.
Yeah.
Or both. I mean, he
scored
almost
it against Watford last season, an overhead kick. So, I would put his goal right up there with Andy Carroll's as far as spectacularness. I thought he took it brilliantly. But we need to start getting a little bit more out of Allaire, and he has to start getting more involved in the game, because he is one of the passengers in the team that if he's not getting the rub of the green, it seems like his head drops and the effort isn't fully there. Now, I'm not one of the guys that's saying he's completely useless. I think he's terrible. I think he should never play for West Ham again, because you keep seeing that over and over again.
I see people saying that. I don't get.
He's not a £45 million player. I think that's safe to say, at least in this system. Maybe he does need a strike partner, play a two up top. I don't know, but I would safely say that we're not getting £45 million for him anytime in the near future. So. But
the difference that you get from Antonio and him, though, and I think just the way we play, and that's why we need the Antonio, we need the Joshua King, we need the whoever exited this week from Prague. We need someone who's just going to be a motor for 90 minutes. And if that's the new West Ham, then so be it, if it's not an Allaire-type player. But we have to play people to their strengths. And I think that's one of the things that we're lacking when you see Allaire on the pitch, is if he's not on it, or you're not getting it to him where he wants it, he's not going to make that happen for you.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see Antonio just absolutely run balls down like you've never seen before. Now, granted, Antonio is faster than Allaire, and I would argue tad more powerful, but maybe finishing ability goes to Allaire, but Antonio makes things happen with pure grit, pure hustle, just will of making it happen. And it's just disappointing, because when Allaire isn't there, nobody else has any clue what to do. For example, you're talking to, there are points today that we didn't have a single attack. Like we weren't threatening at all. Because Bowen and Benrahma can make how many runs, but if there's no one to pass it to, or how many times today do we see people whip the ball in the box to nobody?
Yeah.
All the time. I've seen that all season. So I think sometimes when we're on it, it's incredible, and when we're not, it's non-existent.
Yeah, I think to that point, in January, we definitely need to invest in a striker. Someone who is going to come in, not expect to start, but compete for a place to start. Josh King, maybe that guy, I don't know. I think his injury record is not great. I don't know what he's doing in the championship this season.
So he's perfect West Ham player.
Yeah, I mean, he'd fit right in on the injury, on the medical table. And then I think we also need a left back. So I think you could see the worry. Masuaku went down, and then we're one left-sided injury away from a crisis, and Cresswell rolls his ankle on the artificial turf, on the artificial surface between the pitch and the running track, and I think we need another left-sided defender to be comfortable, because I'm not sold on either one of those two at a full-time left-back position, so I do think we need a left-back, but I think our squad is looking overall pretty darn good. If we could...
So foul. I'm going to interrupt you. So Foul has been an incredible find, whether it be Gold, Sullivan, Moyes, Suchek.
It was Suchek. I think there's no hiding that. It was Suchek, yeah.
I don't care who it was. That was an incredible, incredible hire, incredible find, 100% credit to whoever made that happen, because he's been – I would argue he's been our best player. And he's our right wing back, and was a £5 million bargain. So I would high marks to him.
I mean, I think he is the main reason we scored our goal today. I don't know if you saw, but in the build up to the goal, he had about a 60-yard sprint down the right hand side to fetch a ball and get it, won it, and then that's where the cross came from in order for Allaire to finish it.
Well, the other thing I've been saying to myself, I was waiting for the pod, don't forget this point, is I want to make a point that Lanzini's pass to him, although it was fairly simple, it was in the perfect spot, and Lanzini decided to push it out wide rather than take some shot crossbody mess through traffic. He picked out the right pass to Sofal to cross it to Allaire. So I wanted to give Lanzini his props. And I've been saying in our group chat that Lanzini-Benrahma linkage that we got, I thought was extremely, extremely exciting to see. It reminded me of Dimitri Payet, because I think the best we get out of Lanzini is when he's not the number one guy, but when someone saucy and someone with flair draws one or two defenders, it opens up so much more space for Lanzini to work with, and that's when we get the best out of him.
Yeah, I agree, 100%.
I mean, how many times when Payet left and everyone's like, okay, Lanzini, you're the new Payet, that was a disaster. He completely underperformed. We expected him to be the main guy, and he just wasn't. But when he's the secondary guy that gets all this benefits from the open space, he's picking out the passes and he finds Sofal. You know what I mean? I was very excited to see the two of them work well together.
Yeah, I agree. I think Benrahma is the closest thing that we've had to Dimitri Payet since he left. I am very, very excited by what I see from Benrahma today. Probably not his best game, but I think against those Crystal Palace-like teams is where he's going to struggle the most, is the rough and bruiser teams that are going to man-mark you and stick you and keep you touch tight.
Just nibble all game.
And I thought still he created a lot of space for himself. Yeah. I thought in minute one or two, he created that corner right off the beginning of the game where he slalomed in and made two or three guys miss. I think he has an extremely bright future ahead of him at West Ham United. I am really excited by him, and I think you're right. I think that does probably create some space for Lanzini to function in. He probably won't get many starts, Lanzini, but when we need him to come off the bench like today, I think you might be onto something where that extra yard or two of space that Benrahma is going to give to Lanzini, that could be all the difference he needs to become a solid player. And one other guy I want to really, really mention, I thought Declan Rice was absolutely superb today. Yeah. I mean, he is an absolute Rolls Royce of a player. I think he walks in to any team in the world. I'm not even going to say in the Premier League, in the world, because I think Real Madrid and Barcelona and are struggling so much. I think he can slide right into one of their teams. I think Bayern Munich, he can go play for them. I mean, genuinely, I think if a non-West Ham fans listen to me say that, they think I'm insane. But I don't think people realize how good he is. And if you watch today's game, our entire team ran through Declan Rice. I mean, Declan Rice was covering 40, 50 yards consistently. Just give the ball to Rice, let him run forward, pick out the play, and then we go from there.
His composure, man.
His tackling.
I mean, he wins the ball from the tackle, and he's like, you know what? How many times do we see Mark Noble, and I love Mark Noble, but Mark Noble win the ball, slows it down. No, Declan Rice goes in there hot and heavy, wins the tackle.
Head up,
and then he's like, all right, I'm gonna either dart forward with the ball, and you're like, what the hell? Or he's going to make an excellent pass. You know, I think Declan Rice is an incredible player, and I'm so glad he's still with us right now.
My dad said watching him reminded him of Bobby Moore running it out of the back, the way that Bobby Moore used to run with the ball out of the back. I've never seen that, so I can't say to know what that looks like. But, I mean, if people are saying that about him, I think that's pretty damn high praise for a young kid. He's still a kid. I mean, he's probably – is he younger than Fornals? I'm sure he is.
Yeah, Declan got to be – can't be more than 22 years old. If I could guess, Declan's 22. Declan
– yeah, Rice. I just am so, so pleased with
– 21 years old. He'll be 22 January 14th.
So yeah, I mean, that's wild.
Another one.
He's a kid, and we're talking about him – like he could go play. I mean, I think he walks.
He's been on the side for 3 years now.
He walks into Man City's team. He walks into Liverpool. I think he starts at Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
I would really have a tough time finding a central midfield partnership better in the Premier League than Souček and Rice. I would struggle.
No, seriously, I agree.
struggle to find a better pairing. And again, the people would probably, Chelsea fans would probably think I'm crazy. Liverpool fans would probably think I'm crazy. Man City fans might think I'm crazy. But genuinely, there's not many better midfield duos than Rice and Souček right now, especially the holding midfield position.
Well, the frustrating thing about that is I do agree with you, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, you know, I don't even want to say that you're blowing smoke because you're telling the truth. I genuinely believe what you're saying, and it just speaks volumes to where we're lacking in other areas. That if we feel like that we have one of the best engine duos in the league, you know, in that midfield, better than Chelsea, better than Arsenal, better than Man United, better than City. It's just the quality that those teams have in every other position. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, like the strike force and wingers at Liverpool, you know, or and the cities, everything
Maybe we're not that far behind those teams. I mean, Liverpool, yeah, I don't even think we come close to Liverpool. But the best of the rest, I think we're right up there with them. Right now, it's Leicester, Southampton, and us that are kind of battling for the best of the rest. And we might even be able to beat
Everton
Those teams, Everton, correct, that we might even be able to finish higher than some of those teams that we're talking about that are the usual big six. I mean, I don't think anyone right now is picking Arsenal to finish above us, so that's a huge team to finish above.
But I don't want to down on what you just said there, but the thing about Arsenal and is they still have that quality. They're just a mess of a club. You know, I would still argue that they, on paper, and I even hate myself for saying this, but I feel like it's the truth, I still think that they're a better side than we are on paper. Now, there's a reason you play the game, and I think that we have a better locker room, and I think we have a better culture, and I can't even believe I'm saying that, because our fucking culture at this club is toxic 99% of the time. But we have a lot of great things going for our side, chemistry-wise, but I think on paper I would still argue that they're the better team. So we just have to be careful with saying that.
Do you think Arsenal finish above us this season?
No.
That's my point. That's what I'm saying. No. I'm not saying they're a bad team.
I just think that but I'm not confident with that prediction. I believe that we do finish above Arsenal. However, I'm not confident with that. I'm not sticking it like, yeah, fuck yeah, we are. Because technically, they're still only 7 points back. You know, we're on 21, they're on 14. You know, we go on a rough stretch, lose two games next year.
No, for
right
sure.
There.
But so, my point was, I'm not saying we're definitely going to finish above them, but I'm saying this season we have a chance to finish above one or two or three of the bigger teams. Again, not saying it's going to happen, but we put ourselves in a position to where that is a possibility. We could finish above Man United. We could finish above, I doubt even that's going to happen, but we're above Man City right now. Again, I'm sounds like I'm getting way ahead of myself. All I'm saying is we have put ourselves into a position to battle and put ourselves in the conversation of Europe and definitely in a top half conversation. So
it's funny contrast from our first episode. I'm going to bring it back. I'm going to just say it again because I was the one who predicted top half. But we've put ourselves, and this is where why I said that take on that first episode of the season with Dave and X, that we have a chance to finish in the top half if we get through that run of stretch with some good results. And that's what happened. When we got through that really middle stretch of Wolves, Leicester, Spurs, City, Liverpool, only taking one loss, we put ourselves in a great position going into the Fulham, Sheffield, Villa, where we took 9 points. And then we lost to United and then got 4 more points against Leeds and Palace. And here we are. I think this next stretch, though, is the most important stretch of the season to prove, I like your phrase earlier, are we contenders or pretenders? Because we have Chelsea on Monday.
That'll be a huge game.
That's massive. That could take us above them. And with no extra games in hand or anything. Like, that would take us above Chelsea. You know, it pulled away here. One moment. Chelsea, then we have a home game against Brighton where I think 3 points is required with the way that we are playing and the expectations that we have changed from where we were to now. I'm requiring 3 points against Brighton. And then we have a big match against Southampton and Everton, who are two teams that were competing for that European spot, that non-top six European spot. So these next 4 games are going to be absolutely critical to this season.
For sure. No, I totally agree. To get back to the game, though, one thing I did want to mention is I thought Diop had a really, really shaky game. And he hasn't played in a while, so maybe you expect a little bit of rust, but I thought he was one of the, if you had to give a rating out of 10, I would say he was at like a 4 or a 5. Maybe that's being generous. I thought he had a really rough game, but hopefully Balbuena will be back for Chelsea, they say. Who knows? Maybe Diop stays in the team, gets a run of games, picks up his form. The back four.
I mean, it was his first game in a while. I'm not saying. I mean, we need to expect a top notch performance. When you come into the side, you need to perform well, and that could be you not playing well could be the difference. And that's what we saw today. When that goal, him getting beat like that, I thought was just terrible.
Yeah.
At the same time, this was his first game back, so I do have some sympathy for him. However, it was the difference today. One moment.
And somehow Benteke turns into Ronaldo against us. I mean, that guy should have scored three or four goals against us in the first half, probably, when he hasn't done anything for 5 years. You know, he looked like himself at Aston Villa. But the rest of the team, I thought, was fine. I mean, they were adequate today. They weren't great. I was disappointed.
It was just bland.
Disappointed with the draw. Really disappointed with the draw, especially playing 20 minutes with 10 men, which, again, is not our – we don't like to come on to teams that will park the bus against us. We do not do well in that situation. We do better against the likes of Leeds, who they don't sit back on you. They're trying to attack you the whole game. Crystal Palace is a totally different proposition, which is, again, a reason why I've been skeptical of David Moyes' teams, because we have struggled to break those teams down. So I think it all adds up. Today adds up. Today makes sense. The result makes sense. I was really disappointed with the draw at the end of the day, because I thought with them going down to 10 men, we should try to really, really take the game to them, and we just didn't. I mean, we were trying to pass around and through them, and Benrahma tried to get through there, but they just closed the door on us, and it was 1-1. At the end of the day, it's a fair result. I don't think we deserved to win, probably, but Sebastian Allaire is going to end up as the second best goal of the season, which is crazy to say, but Lanzini's probably going to take goal of the season home with him. But I think Sebastian Allaire scored what will finish as the second best goal that West Ham have scored this year.
I'm okay with the draw. I'm cool. I'm not as disappointed as you are. I wanted to win. I expected a win going into this game. I was really hoping that we would get a result. Just by what I watched today, I am okay with the draw. I'm not thrilled with the performance. I thought it was bland. Like I said at the beginning, I didn't think it was like the worst thing I ever saw. I did say poor. I just think it was bland and passenger-esque. I thought it was just like, eh. So after what I witnessed, I am okay with the draw. I don't think we deserve 3 points. I don't think we deserve to lose either. I was not impressed with Palace. I thought, aside from their one goal, I don't really think that they pressed all that much. You know, Zaha danced in the box one or two times. I thought Eze played fine. But I was not all that impressed with Palace either. So in a battle of teams that didn't really feel like they were playing today, I think a 1-1 is a fair result. I'm cool. I would like to see us pick up the energy levels going into the Chelsea game at the Bridge. I really, really, really need a result that because one of my other buddies, Clay, that y'all might hear me talk about, is a Chelsea fan, and I would love to jump them in the table. So I'm really looking forward to Monday's game.
Did you think Christian Benteke deserved to be sent off? Did you think that was a deserving second yellow?
Yeah, I do. I will say I do. The commentators were saying that it was harsh. I think that if you're already on a yellow for that type of style of play at the beginning of the game, I think that you should have known that flailing your arms. Whether he meant to hit him or not, it still was a swinging motion, and it still hit Suchek in the face. So to me, it was a yellow card. I would never have called that a straight red, but it was a second yellow, considering he already told him about it. You know, I don't know how you jump and not move your arms like that, but I also, plenty of people do it without hitting people in the face. So I will say I think Benteke deserved to be sent off for that.
I did think it was harsh, only because we've sat through years of Andy Carroll doing that exact same thing and getting booked for it constantly. I do feel bad because that style of striker is dying, and that breed of forward is dying, where your target man who you lump the ball up to, you try to flick a header on and play rough and tough and physical. I just think I don't know how you jump and try to for a header without going like this to try to get up in the air with your arms flailing. I definitely don't think he meant to do that at all. I don't think he meant to hurt Suchek or catch anyone in the face. I think it's a natural jumping motion. And I thought Palace fans could feel hard done by with that decision. If that was me as a West Ham fan and we got our player sent off for that, I would have been disappointed and probably upset. But yellow cards are so subjective, it's really tough to debate. I mean, that's why you see it one way, I see it the other. It's not factually one way or the other. I just thought it was harsh, and probably
my biggest critique is that he would have done it again. Warned it.
Yeah, like if you would have done it again after that, then we could have talked about it. But and you could argue it's dangerous play. I mean, clearly Suchek got caught in the face with an elbow, which is dangerous play. I just feel like if that goes out of the game, that style of play, you just see an entire breed of players start to get bred out of the game, and I want to see that kind of play. I like seeing that physical center forward play it and lump it up to him and try to see if he can flick it on or head it on. I don't know. I just, if it were me, if I was a referee, I would have warned him one last time. And if you do it again, you're out. But it's fair enough for us to see it both ways there.
I mean, I would have been perfectly fine if he would have said, "Look, man, I already booked you in the first half for this. I know it wasn't on purpose, but, like, you're really making me look like a dickhead. Do it again. I got to send you off." So, I mean, I would have been okay with that, too. But I just – my argument, he was already warned for it. I do like that style of play, though, too. And I do miss me some Andy Carroll. I really do. But at the same time, we did witness Andy Carroll getting booked for that shit for the last 3 years. So at least it's consistent.
Well, when I had Bobby Madley on, one of my questions was to him was, is Andy Carroll the toughest player to officiate in the Premier League? And he took a minute and he thought about it. He said, yeah, probably, because at the end of the day, he's just bigger than everyone else. And so that makes it – now, Suchek's a big guy, but Benteke is still bigger than Suchek, and he has a right to go up for the ball and try to win it. And your elbows are going to come out from your side. So it all adds up is what I'm trying to say, is that those players are really hard to referee. So those decisions are very subjective and very tough. And if you go back and listen to the Bobby Madley episode, or even I just posted the best of episode of it, he did say that Andy Carroll was the toughest player, and players like that are the toughest kind of players to officiate in the Premier League. So that's what I wanted to end that game on. I just want to get a quick assessment of where your head was at. By the way, I did do a giveaway, or I attempted to do a giveaway of a shirt today. I put up my Doc Martens Fila shirt that is a beautiful shirt. I just never wear it. So I decided that I would do a holiday giveaway and try to do it. We did not have a winner, so I will be doing the giveaway again for the Chelsea game until we get a winner. I'll be posting it every game, and unless interest dies down, but I don't see that happening. I think people will want the shirt.
Well, no, I was a little pissy because that's my size. I'm an XL, so
it's a small XL. Like, it's snug on me.
Oh well, I'm a big XL. I'm a little extra cushion there.
So maybe I have to wear
a little tight for me there.
Yeah, it's XL is usually, actually, I wear large T-shirts.
That's that European polos. XL, not it that is. American XL.
That's exactly what it is. So,
yeah,
it's a beautiful shirt. So, if you are interested and you missed out on this one, so what I'm going to do is the day of the game, or maybe the day before the game, I'm not sure.
Like the day of the game.
Yeah.
In the morning.
Yeah, in the morning of the game. I put up, you have to retweet, you have to like the tweet that I posted on, and then you have to correctly predict the first goal scorer and the correct result of the game, which is tough. It's tough to do, but
we'll keep it going.
The first ever winner, whoever wins, whenever game that is, I will, wherever in the world you are, I will send you that shirt, absolutely no charge, and it'll just be a fun little competition to keep doing. So we did have one person correctly predict that Benteke would be the first goal scorer. However, he predicted 2-2. It finished 1-1. So we did not have a winner. So keep an eye out for that. Keep an eye out for that in the coming Monday will be the next game against Chelsea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all I got for this game. Let's see. We did get some questions. You did put up a last-minute tweet. Since we're recording this almost maybe, what, an hour or two after the game, we didn't get as many as we normally do, but we did get some good things in here.
Yep, so the first one here is from Tony Hatcher, presumably at Tony Hatcher. Presumably sticking with the same formation against Chelsea has me nervous considering the pace they have on the wings. Doesn't solve the issue, but do you expect Lanzini to start over Fornals? Not slagging Fornals. He's a net positive on the pitch, but Lanzini looked quality today. So what would you do against Chelsea?
Yes, Tony Hatcher and Tony Clark agree.
One thing, Matt Randall too, basically said the exact same thing. He says, love the show, guys. Do we start a back four against Chelsea? We look a little iffy with it, but injuries to Masuaku, Balbuena, and Cresswell limping today. Do we have enough players to go to a back five? So they're both basically asking the same thing.
Okay, shout out to Matt Randall as well. But Tony Hatcher, I agree with you. I think Lanzini needs to start over Fornals. I would like to see four in the back because I don't think we have the personnel to do five, kind of relating to what Matt Randall said. And I would like to see Benrahma push to the wing and Lanzini playing that center attacking role just behind Allaire. I think the link-up play that we saw at the end of the game between Lanzini and Benrahma, I think will be extremely exciting to watch, and I would love to see that go against Chelsea, especially a team that's going to try and attack us. Lanzini and Benrahma trying to hit them on the break. I'll be excited to see that. If we lose 3-0, I'm okay with being wrong, but I would love to see us stick it to them and try and go after it with that formation, four in the back, seeing Lanzini start with Benrahma. How about you?
Yeah, I don't – and you're not – it's not because of anything that Fornals has done wrong, more that Lanzini just fits with the way you want to play more so than Fornals does is what you're kind of getting at, right?
Oh, no, I have nothing – I have not one bad thing to say about Fornals. I think that – I mean, would I like to see him finish off some of these chances more? Sure. However, here's the thing that I have an issue with – singling out for now is I think he's done a good job to get himself in position to miss some of these opportunities. But, you know, Bowen and Allaire and a few other guys have missed opportunities too. And I think we, for whatever reason, we love to pick on and just single out for nows. This team has created a lot of whatever this X-Gen bullshit expected goals stats. Funny from a guy who does analytics, I don't really follow all of that. But we create a lot of chances and don't finish. And it's not 100% Fornals. So would I bench Fornals for Lanzini? Yes, because of what I saw today. I'm excited to see Lanzini express himself a little bit more like he did today. And I would like to see that pairing. And that dropping of Fornals has nothing to do with his play. It's the way that they would fit together in that formation.
I would say I don't think – with Masuaku going out, I don't think we are capable of playing a back five anymore. I'm not comfortable with Ben Johnson playing there. I'm not comfortable with Cresswell really playing there. Maybe you could throw Cresswell there. I think he's been so good at left center back. I don't really want him playing as a left wing back. But maybe you could do that. I'm probably sticking with the back four and going with the defensive back four. I would not bring Lanzini in. I would stick with Fornals, mainly because I like what Fornals brings defensively more so than Lanzini, and I think we are going to have to play on the counter, and maybe you could argue that Lanzini going forward would be more suitable. I'm just saying I would probably stick with Fornals instead of Lanzini just because I like what Fornals brings, but I'm sticking with the back four. I'm not playing a back five against Chelsea.
One of the things I want to point out that you just said that I just find interesting the way that you and I see this, because I'm agreeing with you, is I think Fornals actually does bring something slightly defensively to that outside position. I just remember at the beginning of the season and even last season, people were questioning his work rate and defensive abilities. And I think that that's something he's really worked on. And the last few games, I think that we've seen him track back more and more.
Oh, that's one thing you can't question is his work rate. I think his work rate is the best on the team. Probably, I think it probably is the best on the team, Fornals' work rate.
Right, so not that he listened to the fans, because I don't think he gives a fuck about what we have to say, but I think that he has really really added that to his game and transformed what he's trying to do as a player.
Yeah. Anyway, the next one here is from Matt Edge Wilkins, at Matt Edge Wilkins, and he says, what does Moyes see in Fornals that the rest of us don't? So he is clearly a Fornals hater. I think I'm going to start on this one, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go on.
I think Moyes sees exactly what I see. And I mean, I think he sees very high work rate, someone who's going to give it all for the team week in, week out. You're never going to question what he gives to you. He's going to empty the tank every single game for you. Defensively, he's going to be reliable. He'll track back. Pace, you're not getting much of it. You're not getting a ton of pace. We know that. Finishing is what he can work on, but he gets himself into some grade A chances to score goals. And that's not because he's just lucky. He's luckily in that. I mean, you have to get yourself in a position to score goals, which he does when he's up there. I think his finishing needs to be improved. I think he'll tell you that. I think he should probably have 10 goals this season, and he's only got 2 or 3. But I really love Pablo Fornals, and I'm glad I don't have to be annoyed that he's starting every week, because I thought he was the only one holding Benrahma out of the team. I wanted to see Benrahma so bad that I wasn't slagging Fornals. I would just wish that Moyes would play him over, and now that they're both in the team together, I'm happy with that. I'm fine with that. But I think Fornals is a good player, and I think Moyes sees that, and I think a lot of the fans see that, but a lot of the fans are also fickle, and they see that, oh, he missed another chance today, so he's shit, basically, is what they say.
Well, here's what I think Matt – I can't speak for Matt specifically, but I'm going to try and make an inference, because I'm not calling him fickle. I don't – he just doesn't rate Fornals. And I think a lot of people that don't rate Fornals, if I could try and speak on Matt's behalf and he can respond – I think one of the things Fornals has been doing is he's been doing a lot of things solid, but nothing great. I think that one of the things Fornals' game is he's been fairly solid defensively. He's been solid in the attack. I think he's had solid passing, but I don't think that he's done anything exceptional. So I think when fans and supporters are looking for a player to do one thing exceptional in a position, when you're looking at a striker, you're looking for someone to score goals. When you're looking at a winger, you're looking for someone to make runs and whip in crosses and do stuff like that. So I think Fornals' issue is he's not doing one thing extremely well that we can all see. I think he's doing 5 to 10 things averagely solid. I don't think he's been exceptional at anything, but I really don't think he's been poor. I think he's just been a solid, average player in the side. So I think what people don't rate him is that he's not doing anything sexy. He's not doing anything that is exceptional. He's not like Declan, who wins the ball on every tackle. He's not like a striker who scores. He's not like a winger who's making runs. I think he just does a lot of facets of the game solidly well,
yeah,
rather than one thing extremely well, yeah, that we noticed.
This season he's got 2 goals and 2 assists, which was a little less than I thought. I thought he had a couple more assists than that, but still, I think overall he's been a solid player for us this season. And I think a lot of people do agree with Matt Edge Wilkins that he is not a very good player, or he's not the finished product yet. And I don't think he's the finished product yet, but I think there's plenty to look positively on. I think there's a lot of positives there, and I think a lot of people are writing him off far too quickly. Much like I think people are writing off Allaire too quickly. And this is the thing about fans is, just because you get in a run of games where you're not superb, they just instantly write you off and say you're shit. Maybe we've seen enough out of Allaire. I'm not ready to say he's crap and he's useless. I'm not there yet. But I think Fornals will be a very solid player for us in the years to come in the Premier League, and including this year. I think he's got a lot to offer.
I just want to go back to your Allaire point. Or actually, let me ask the next question, and then I'll answer it because it kind of goes into Allaire.
Sure.
Paul Wilson, which is Wilbur_01 on Twitter, says, when fit, Antonio or Allaire? I'm not sure it's as clear-cut as we think. I do. I think the answer is Antonio. I like Allaire a lot. Like, I think that he's worth the $45 million. And I probably sound crazy. I don't care. I like Sebastian Allaire. I like the player that he is. Just because he doesn't smile when he scores, like, I don't give a fuck about that.
Yeah, I don't know why people care about that so much. Like, it's so stupid.
That's ridiculous.
That's who he is. That was how he was. He scored 30 goals at Eintracht Frankfurt. It did the exact same thing.
That's his celebration. Like, his celebration is like, I don't smile. I'm like, Anyway, I like Sebastian Allaire. I just don't think that we play to his system. And then people would argue, well, if you pay $45 million for the wanker, then he might as well fit our system. It's like, well, no, you got to adjust to the type of players that they are. So in my opinion, I don't think we play a system. He benefited so much off of, Jovic, whatever. He benefited so much off of Jovic, and they had a great partnership. And we played him in a one-striker system nonstop. So he hasn't had a chance to have a partner. You know, you and I think, or at least I have, I would love to see him and Antonio play. But then now we have to abandon all the other signings. Because if him and Antonio played together as dual strikers rather than Antonio on the wing, now what are you going to have? Two strikers and two wingers? And have Suchek and Rice get exposed in the middle? No. We don't have the quality to play a front four. So it's just the type of player that he is. I don't think that he fits our system, and I really want it to work out for him. I think he's seems like a cool guy, a great guy in the locker room. I think he's a hell of a talent. He pulls out worldies like we've seen today, incredible strikes that we've seen against Sheffield. He has the talent. He's trying to tell us. I feel like he's like crying out for help. He's like, help me, I can do this. So I think he's a very good player. I just think that the way we play, we need someone who's just going to run the balls down, and it's got to be Antonio.
Yeah. So when both players are 100% fit, and I mean 100% fit, that means that when Antonio's ready to come back, Moyes isn't taking any heat for this. I 1,000,000% blame him for. And you know how I said last podcast, is he injured or did he just bring him off tactically? Clearly he was injured. He was injured when he came off, and no one even talked about it. Moyes isn't taking any heat for that. That is on him for rushing him back when it wasn't necessary. I would not have played him in that game.
Yep, him and his team.
Again,
and the physio team.
Again, I'm not at training every day. Maybe he was setting the world on fire, looking fantastic in training all week, and he's telling you that he's ready to come back. But I, even if he was saying that, I would have not played him, and I'm saying I'm easing you back into this team. And I thought he was running to the ground. He looked dreadful that half against whoever it was.
He looked timid.
Yeah, I mean, he just was not the same player.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Moyes, I think, does take some heat. Now, but when they are fully fit, if Antonio is 1,000,000% fit and Haller's 1,000,000% fit, I'm playing Antonio 10 out of 10 times. It just, you said it, he fits the system better. The work rate needed for the system is better. Yes. I think all around it's just a better. But that's not to say I don't think Allaire is shit. So that's not a knock on Allaire. I just think Antonio is the better fit in that position.
I'd hate to see him go too. That's the worst part about it. I'd hate to see Allaire go. But at the same time, you can't have a $45 million player sitting on the bench because he doesn't fit your system. Like you fucked up for that. You as in the club, like y'all should have purchased someone who fits the system or purchase other players to play around him and change the system. But that's what here in the position we're in is now you have that. And I think he's quality. I don't care what anyone says. People are saying, oh, he's shit, blah, blah, blah. No, I think he's quality. And I just don't think that he has had the right shake. And I do see the point that people say, well, okay, well, if he's making that much money, he needs to adjust to us. But that's just not realistic. You don't ask Declan Rice to go ahead and score goals. Like, no, that's not the type of player he is. So, I'm sorry. I don't think that he's going to work out here, and I think he needs to go. I don't want to see him go. I think he needs to for his career and for our finances. And I would like to see us reinvest that money into one or two players. If we can get maybe 30 to 35 back, I know I'm being audacious for a guy who's sitting on the bench, but if we can get 30 to 35 back and reinvest that into one or two or three players that will fit our system back, I think we can storm forward.
Yeah, I just don't know who's going to be able to afford that
right now. But,
yeah, who knows? Do we have any other questions, or is that it?
That looks to be it right now.
Okay.
Yep, no more last-minute questions.
Do you have anything else you want to add before we wrap this up?
No, I think it was exciting to do a podcast. I miss you, buddy. I'm very thankful to our listeners. We've been doing one maybe about every 2 weeks. It's tough. I really wish we could do it every week, and I think that we'll keep trying to. Maybe Monday night after the Chelsea game, we can do another podcast and get that out. But all I want to finish up with is say thank you to our listeners. It really means a lot, especially all the interactions and retweets, even if it was for the T-shirt and not us today. It means a lot, and this is the reason why we do it. We don't get paid. We don't do it for fame, clearly, because we're not that popular. But it's really just for us to have some fun and interact with other supporters, and we appreciate y'all who listen and do interact.
Yep, and today, 3 years ago today, we went to our first league game together for Stoke away. Was 3 years ago today, and that was a lot of fun. That was a good day out.
That was the one Arnie got coined by the Stoke fans. That was a fun day out.
The power went out.
Yep. That was our first. That was our first Premier League game together.
Yeah, first league game together is what I said. Because we went to the RailHawks game.
We went. You and I were in the North Carolina preseason friendly together. But yeah, that was our first league game together. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was a great day out, and the power went out. Stuck outside the stadium for an hour before the game, trying to get in. It was fun.
Yeah, great day out.
A lot of fun.
So do you want to take us out with all the fun stuff that I mess up every week?
Yep. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at West Ham Way US Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at Brawley Darbin. You can follow Tony on Twitter at Tony Clark Dupe. If you please would go and leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, we would greatly appreciate it. And keep an eye out for the Fila Doc Martens home West Ham shirt giveaway that I'll be doing before every single game until someone wins the shirt. So signing off this week, hopefully we'll be coming to you after a big win against Chelsea. But until then, we'll see you later.
Ards.